The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is in the house. Hey, Doug.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Have had a wonderful week. Geez, look at this weather.
It's fantastic.
You couldn't dial it up any better. Yeah. We had a great Halloween evening. You and I live in the same neighborhood. Lots of kids out trick-or-treating. It was
a pleasure
to see that. I was on the golf cart, as you well know,
came by my house.
Yeah.
Yeah, had a good time.
Yeah, and for those of you that think that I'm running for school board, I am not running for school board. My cousin is running for school board. So I'm saying that not as an official endorsement or anything like that, but just more of an education. I'm not really at liberty, I guess, to endorse even my cousin, but although I was with him yesterday when he recorded some spots here at the radio station that will be starting on Friday. But well, there's a lot of signs out. This is Hayes for school board, common sense approach to education. Well, that is his approach, and he wants to serve and do it. I honestly, think that anyone that does that is a saint, because it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. But it's not me.
It's not me.
I'm going to deny it all the way until Tuesday night. It's not me. But anyway, I'm just putting that out there because I get literally, I don't know how many a day ask me if I'm running for school board. No, I am not. All right, let's get into the show. First of all, lots been going on since last week. So let's take a look at last week first, and then we'll bring Hot Rod in to give us a glimpse into what's been going on this week. Well, of course, stocks overcame poor earning results from one of America's largest companies to post gains last week as investors cheered positive earnings surprises, easing inflation, and a rebound in economic growth. All the major indices were up for the week. We kind of had that spooktacular week, as we've been saying. Some mega cap companies were under pressure last week on weak earnings and tepid fourth quarter guidance. They reported multiple headwinds, including declining advertising revenue, loose expense controls. Don't you feel like that sometimes, Doug? Loose expense control.
And the quicker you don't look, the quicker it goes away.
That's right. I feel that way right now. A little loose expense control going on, especially as we get into the holiday season, and a slowdown in cloud growth. Meanwhile, positive earnings from some of the old economy companies powered the markets higher. And that is obvious by the Dow, because the Dow is more that industrial, right? Dow Jones Industrial versus the S&P that's cap-weighted, right? So the mega cap stocks really power the performance of the S&P both ways, up or down.
And I think the Dow actually had its best month since 1976.
Something like crazy like that, yeah. So the S&P is the S&P, the Dow is the Dow. But it kind of helped illustrate the power of the rally that was the powerful Dow move. Momentum then accelerated into Friday, aided by an easing inflation number, which wasn't that much that lower, but a solid third quarter GDP report as well. So after two straight quarters of negative economic growth, the initial estimate of third quarter GDP came in at a solid 2.6%. Had exceeded economists' estimates, but the surprising economic performance was largely attributed to an increase in exports, mainly like natural gas and things like that, right? Which narrowed the trade deficit, a development that may not get to repeat itself. So that encouraging information also came out on personal consumption expenditures, a report used by the Fed to track inflation. It increased 4.2%, well below the 7.3 jump a quarter ago. So a lot has happened since last Friday. Of course, the Fed met, and they did what they said they were going to do. And we're going to grab Hot Rod to really get an idea of what happened, what's being signaled, and what the markets are doing, and really what to expect, I think, as we roll into the end of this year and into the first of next year. Let's take a quick break. We'll get Hot Rod on the phone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Well, the Federal Reserve lifted interest rates by another 75 basis points to combat inflation and signaled plans to keep rising them, possibly in smaller increments, but to higher levels than previously anticipated. After the Fed approved its fourth consecutive 0.75-point rate increase, Chairman Powell said the central bank officials would contemplate a smaller hike in their next meeting in December, but he cautioned that they might raise borrowing costs next year more than they have projected. So the question of when to moderate the pace of increases is now much less important than the question of how high to keep interest rates and how long to keep monetary policy restrictive, he said at a news conference that followed. Mr. Powell also warned that reducing the size of rate increases didn't mean the Fed thought it was close to pivoting away from raising rates. He said it's very premature to think about pausing. We think we have a ways to go. Rod, to me, there is no mincing of words there, right? But the market always seems to want to dig in to figure out what he said that might lead them to believe that the end is near. But nothing in his comments signaled that.
No, most certainly didn't, nor has it, or any of the Fed presidents or the Fed governors that have spoke. They've been very consistent with their message. They've been all on the same message, basically. And that's a little bit of what I have told Glass on his show. It leads me to believe that the sellers are a little bit worn out and tired from all the selling that they've done this year, and that the buyers are looking for a reason to be enthusiastic about potentially buying. Because, you know, just a few weeks ago, the market was getting excited thinking that maybe the Fed would pause. Well, they let go of the pause and then started talking about a pivot from 75 basis points down to 50 basis points as if that was something brand new and something to get all excited about from the buyer side of the marketplace. Well, the reality is what Fed told us really should have been common sense and very obvious to everybody. This 75 basis point increase puts us up to that range of 3.5% to 4% on the federal funds rate. Well, if their long-term goal right now is 4.5% to 5%, because 5% is the new one, 4.5% was kind of the old one, well, you don't necessarily need to go at 75 bips anymore to necessarily get there, because you're almost getting there. Even if you just do the 50 bips, that's going to now throw you up over the 4% and begin approaching that 4.5%. Yes, they have now alluded to, I think it was a week and a half ago, one of the board members had said 5% is probably the optimal number that they need to get to. And then that's exactly what Chairman Powell alluded to yesterday. So, this guessing of when they're going to pause or when they're going to slow down has really been kind of, a fool's game within the market. Because what's most important longer term is the fundamentals in the economy, fundamentals within the individual companies themselves, and the end game of where the Fed thinks they need to get to. And the Fed believes they need to get at least to 4.5% or 5%. But let's be honest, if inflation is still considerably above 5% when they hit the market mark of 5%, they're probably going higher, because we have typically always fought inflation by having the federal funds rate end up higher than what the inflation rate is. So we got a long ways to come down before those two lines cross.
You know, I actually had dinner this week with a commercial insurance guy, a construction friend of mine that's in residential roofing, commercial roofing. I've had conversations with lots of different contractors, and in their mind, they are in a recession now. They are in one right now. They can't get rid of stuff that they have on the market. Costs of concrete now, is what they were telling me, is now like out of this world because of some component they can't get to make up concrete. So these guys are feeling it already. But I think you hit it on the head in saying, listen, this summer, this fall, people are going to spend money. Now they're spending money they don't have. Credit card balances are on the increase. Savings accounts are on the decrease. Yep. We're moving into the holiday season. Consumers surprised everyone a little bit last week with some numbers. But I don't know, Rod. I think that the Fed's doing all they can do. You know, they waited way too long to start. That's the problem. It's like any other crises or anything that comes up. The longer you wait, the worse the problem, the worse the solution is going to feel. That's been my narrative when it comes to tax rates, right? If we don't deal with Social Security sooner than later, if we don't deal with our deficit and debt problems sooner than later, then the solution is going to be really, really ugly and painful whenever it hits. And this is what we're feeling now. So I can tell you, from me talking to boots on the ground, people that are in business, especially in those industries, And even retail, some retail folks are telling me that, you know, the furniture stores, people are not coming in like they used to. My good buddy that owns a furniture store here in town said, you know, they had 3 or 4 people come in last weekend. Thankfully, they had one person buy a bunch of stuff. Yep. But, you know, they're not seeing the foot traffic that they saw. So I guess I'm saying all that to say some people feel like we're already in a recession. So hopefully when December comes, the Fed can look a little bit in the rearview mirror and see what kind of stuff's going on, and knowing that it takes some time for their actions to catch up with what they with the reality of what we're facing.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem with that, as far as them potentially analyzing some of the things that you're hearing with the boots on the ground conversations with the small business owners, they are very fearful of making the mistakes of the 70s and early 80s of letting off the brake too soon before inflation was really conquered. And I think that the Fed is going, similarly to how they did with keeping rates low, they said we will keep rates low and probably low longer than we need to,
right,
but to make sure that we fully stimulate and get out of the situation that we're in. I think they're going to do the same thing on the upside, and they're going to err on becoming too restrictive. And the reality is, a big chunk of the data that they examine is backwards looking and sometimes kind of old. So you do get a little bit better gauge of having those conversations with actual people that are dealing with small businesses, and whether it's the retail, the restaurants, whatever it is, construction, all of that. They've got a little bit better feel of what's starting to happen, even though it's not showing up in the national numbers yet. But that's why I've been very cautious from the standpoint of thinking, I don't think Fed is pausing because of those types of things we're hearing. Not to say that it's not a legitimate reason to do so. I just believe they're going to continue to stick with the data that they have always analyzed. That data is lagging and will more than likely cause them to go a little bit too far. Now, that doesn't mean we can't have rallies. We've had some rallies this year. Of course, the rallies haven't taken us back into positive territory from being negative. But I think that we have another potential rally left ahead of us by year end. Part of it's seasonality. It's the feel-good season of the holidays, and people tend to feel a little bit better. And as you bounce off of this low that we got down around the 3,500 level on the S&P 500, technically you can see a reason to do a little bit of buying. But for that new uptrend to be sustainable and longer term and turn into a new bull market and leave this bear market behind, well, the fundamentals both of the economy and of individual corporations are going to have to tell the similar story. And as you and I spoke yesterday a little bit about it, earnings are still being pushed down for the future. So we don't have earnings growth at hand as of yet. It will come back. But until we start to see earnings come back or corporations begin to talk more positively about the future, then fundamentally it's just going to be hard to get into a longer-term sustained rally. But we can most certainly have some pretty powerful rallies inside this bear market that we're currently in.
So people that are out there nervous about retirement, nervous about, you know, where things are headed, they just need to, I guess, take a positive spin on this. Number one, that markets, they will recover. They always do. We just can't tell you exactly when it's going to happen. So don't do anything silly with your money. Number two, there's an incredible opportunity right now that we haven't seen in our entire career on buying a fixed income at such high yields. I mean, I don't never have been able to buy something that matures in 2 years and get paid between 4% and 5%. That's never been available to me in my entire career. So a lot of people who have had money sitting in the bank, I had several meetings this week. It's like, hey, you know, would you like to move some of this into treasuries or some of this into, you know, something that's very short term, highly liquid, that you're going to get paid four on? They're like, well, yeah, why wouldn't I do that? So there is a great opportunity right now for us to, number one, don't do the wrong thing. That's a good opportunity. Number one, don't do the wrong thing. That's, you know, not doing anything is also a decision that people make. But Rod, there's a great opportunity right now for us to pick up some yields that we haven't seen. I don't think I've ever seen.
Yeah, most certainly. And obviously, everything you just said is 100% dead on and accurate, you know, but on my side of the world where I'm predominantly the equity guy and dealing with the equities, I said there are golden opportunities over there as well. You know, that's one of the concepts that is very tough for the retail investor to grasp onto. I don't know how many people I've had conversations with that are dollar cost averaging in on a monthly basis and want to turn that off and say, I'll turn it back on when I feel better about the economy. Well, when you feel better about the economy, it's because the market has already taken off and had a huge rally. Why do you not want to buy stocks on sale? You know, you're buying stocks, high quality companies, much, much cheaper today than what they were 3 months ago, 6 months ago, or even a year ago.
Right.
So don't automatically buy because of where the stock used to be and where the stock is today. That's also another one of those fool's game of going, well, gosh, if this stock used to be trading at 100 and now it's trading at 25, it must be a good deal. Well, not automatically, but there are most certainly some very good companies that have had earnings and revenue dip slightly because we do have a slowdown in the economy. But their business model is still fully intact. Their product is still in demand and will be in greater demand when the economy begins to grow again. Why would you not want to buy them at a discount as opposed to waiting until the market takes off and rallies 15 or 20% and then you feel good about where everything's at? That's when you want to become a buyer? Yeah, it's probably when you should be taking a little bit of profits off of all the money you made by buying all the way down and then allowing them to rally all the way back up. Once again, it comes down to your time horizon. And if you're still in accumulation phase, what's going on this year, while it's no fun to look at your monthly statement, is exactly what you want in accumulation phase. If you're in retirement phase, hopefully your asset allocation is appropriately set up. You have no dollars exposed to equities that are going to be needed for quite a while. Or if you're approaching retirement, hopefully you already began to reduce the risk within the portfolio so that when you go ahead and retire at the end of this year, you already have dollars set aside that are safe and highly liquid to turn on in income in those first few years and give time for the equity and the growth side to recover before you tap into it at some point down the road.
Rod Holloway, folks, he is our equity portfolio guy down at CFCI, and of course you hear him on Monday in the afternoon on Glass in the afternoon and also on Big Show Friday. So, Rod, we'll be listening to you on Big Show Friday as we wrap up the week, and then I'll see you at the tailgate on Saturday.
That sounds good, Dave. Go Hoosiers. Have a great show, and I will talk to you later.
All right, man. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I have a question. Midterm elections, right? Are they coming up soon? They are. A lot of people have already voted, but if few things you need to know about midterm elections and the market. When we come back, this is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, it's not uncommon that the White House occupant party, whether it's a Dem or Republican, has tended to not perform well in the midterm elections. In fact, the presidential political party over the past six decades has lost, on average, 23 seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. The only two people, presidents, who led their party to gain seats in the House were Bill Clinton back in 1998 and good old George W. Bush back in 2002. But the stock market has had positive returns in the calendar year following midterm elections for more than six decades, regardless of the election outcome. Duggar, I don't know why that's the case, but I just think that it's the uncertainty. And then once the certainty is put in place, the market tends to like that. And then on top of that, hopefully we'll have seen the light at the end of the tunnel on things what Rod just talked about. And history tells us that next year could be a really good year.
Absolutely. And one item I would add to that is it could be that there's a bit of gridlock. Sometimes the markets do better under gridlock than they do a House, a Senate, and a White House all facing the same direction.
Yeah, actually, usually the less they do, the better off we are.
Exactly, right. Like, so there's more negotiation on bills and appropriations and things of that nature. And so sometimes gridlock, you know, you always feel good when you're getting a little bit of a victory. And so sometimes in your opposite political party, a victory in the midterms kind of maybe points to a better direction from the election that happened for the White House a couple of years before.
And if you go back and look at all these decades I just talked about, declining real income has tended to also result in political change. So I don't think there's any doubt we're going to see some change. Inflation, according to a June report from ABC News, said it's the top issue in voters' minds. 80% of Americans said that inflation is extremely or very important factor in how they vote. Periods of real income decline, which means I give our employees a raise of 6%, which we did last year or heading into this year. And lo and behold, inflation was like 8. So their real income was negative 2.
You know, and it's interesting, too, when we think about the word inflation, it's always kind of been about a fifth to sixth or seventh, eighth word we would use. But starting last year, it became number one. And it'd be interesting to know, and I don't have this fact, but when the last time inflation was the number one issue on voters' minds, what year you'd have to go back to for people to say, this is the number one thing on my mind.
Right, right. And reality is businesses, income is down in a lot of businesses. Expenses are up because employees are more expensive now. Everything's more expensive now, so it's all going to catch up with us. Another interesting thing about midterms, markets have historically been pretty volatile in year two of a presidential cycle, going all the way back 6 decades. It's pretty interesting to go back and look at these charts, and perform strongest in year three, regardless of the midterm outcomes. Mm-hmm. So that's, again, on our side.
Yep.
Markets have seemed to prefer a divided government, like you said. I'm looking here at a piece.
Yeah.
Going all the way back, it seems to perform the best when we have opposing parties in the House of Representatives or the Senate and also in the White House. So we have that to look forward to as well.
Yeah.
And there's another couple things that are kind of boring in here, but politicians don't radically re-engineer the economy or dramatically alter economic growth. Many people fear that a political party might radically re-engineer the economy, but consumption, business investment, and government spending have been remarkably consistent as a percentage of GDP over multiple years. I mean, in fact, it's increased, consumer spending has become a bigger part of our economy over the last 6 decades, around 70% of, mm-hmm. So, you know, as go the consumer, as goes the economy as well. And last but not least, I think I may have one more thing to say, that investors have been better off staying fully invested.
Yes.
They had go through and we looked at if you pulled money out and you missed this and you did that, but by far, the best performing portfolios over the past 120 plus years stayed fully invested throughout both Democratic and Republican administrations. Hypothetically, those who only invested during a single party rule by their preferred party during the divided government fared much, much worse. The more time investors spent participating in markets and the less time they spent focusing on politics, the better.
The better.
I would put that phrase with lots of things.
Absolutely.
The less time you spend focusing on politics, the better. I mean, I could apply that to just about anything and everything in
life. I've pretty much pulled out of it. And, you know, I have a lot of opinions about it, and I read about it, think about it a lot, but I've really kind of just pulled away from it. I don't follow it too much anymore.
Well, if my wife comes through the living room around 10 o'clock and I have any news on at all, she'll say, just turn that off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I'll turn it off.
Yeah.
I'd rather watch, like, Below Deck.
Okay.
Is that
a cruise ship show or something?
It's
like?
More of a yachting show. Like, okay. It's high-end yachting, and they have crew, and it's really about the crew more than it is about the guest. Or my wife says she watched certain shows so she can feel better about herself.
Okay.
So I get sucked into watching some of that stuff, and it's just mindless stuff that happens at night, and, you know, and I'll be flipping through maybe some articles as well, Wall Street Journal, things like that at night, trying to get ideas for the show or for the podcast. And it's unbelievable how many great ideas come to me during these silly, silly shows I'm paying half attention to.
Well, there you go.
And I mean, I got a list of them she watches. In fact, I don't even have, like, when I turn the TV on, it wants to know who's viewing the TV. Like, I don't know if that's common or not, but I don't even have a profile on my TV. You know, it's her. So I have to pull up hers, and everything that she watches is stuff that says that I would like to watch.
Okay.
Well, that's not really true. So I have to comb through tons and tons of stuff to ever come up with anything.
Like a title that you would be interested in.
Yeah, like Meat Eaters. I love watching Meat Eaters on Netflix, right?
Okay.
So that doesn't pop up every time. And I love watching documentaries, and I love history, and I love all this other stuff. But anyway, our profiles are vastly different. But that's why they say opposites attract. All right.
There you go.
I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I talked about this a little bit last week, But 2022 capital gain distribution estimates are out. What to do about it? I'll talk to you about the podcast that I did on that, taking a deep dive, and then also just something to be aware of. It's something that could catch you off guard. Who wants to lose money on something but also pay tax? Nobody. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Have you looked at your 2022 capital gain estimates yet? They're rolling out now. It's on your mutual funds held outside of retirement accounts. We don't care if they're inside a retirement account because it doesn't really matter. But there's certain asset classes which have experienced large outflows this year, forcing managers to sell highly appreciated stocks that maybe they've held for years and years and years and realize large capital gains within their portfolio. A popular fund in the large caps growth space, for example, I saw today, is going to have a distribution of 19.5% of their entire net asset value in early December. And Doug, what in the world am I talking about?
Wow. You're talking about a mutual fund that's had a big turnover, a big sale. It's a capital gain.
Yeah. So tell people, because you teach about this in your class, phantom gains with mutual funds. Walk people through what it is and the risk of it, especially if you've just jumped in that fund this year.
Right. So when you buy a mutual fund, you always have to remember that portfolio manager is managing to the objective, not to your tax situation. So if they are managing to an objective that requires them to be a high turnover fund 1 year, a low turnover fund the next year, or a high turnover fund again the next year, they're just buying and selling securities within that fund, and you are totally, you know, you're totally left holding the bag for whatever the taxes may be. Now, some years it'll be worse than others, but the reality is you could buy a fund, literally lose money, and if the portfolio manager has to sell due to objective, or as you just brought up, maybe there's been a big outflow and the portfolio doesn't have a line of credit to meet redemptions, they have to start selling securities to meet redemptions. Next thing you know, they could be selling something they've held for a long period of time, or even a short period of time, and you are on the hook for the tax in the form of short term or long term capital gains out of a mutual fund, not a tax efficient vehicle for a brokerage account.
So when you're a forced seller because of redemption, like you said, you don't have a line of credit or something to cover it. But even with the line of credit, eventually they're going to have to manage that down and sell it.
Exactly.
Another expense that doesn't get disclosed to you, by the way, folks, expense of interest on a line of credit on a fund that is used to cover redemptions. Just a little side note. But this fund manager may have owned one of these mega cap companies for 20 years and then sell it. And I just got in the fund this year because it had a good performance over time. I'm like, that looks like a good fund. So I'm down 20, 25% potentially. Mm-hmm. And I pay taxes on the sale that they did in the fund because now I'm part of that fund. And that's what we call phantom gains. So keep your eyes open for that. So just like I talked about in the podcast, if you didn't get a chance to listen to it, I did an entire podcast on never let a loss go to waste, never let a good loss go to waste. As we approach the end of the very turbulent year we've had, it is time to go through your year-end checklist with, you know, your stuff. And control what you can control. That's my motto, right? I can only control the things that I can control. Well, you can control this. If you get an estimate that says, hey, we're going to blow out 19% of the fund to you as a gain, and you've only owned it for a year or two, and you're like, I don't want that. Sell it. Take your loss, right? Go buy something different. That's called harvesting your loss. Now you get to bank that loss. You get to use it off of future gains that you may have. And again, folks, we're not talking about stuff that's inside of a Roth IRA, the holy grail of retirement accounts, or a traditional IRA or 401k. This is a mutual fund you own in a taxable account where you pay taxes every year. Mm-hmm. So I get into the details on how this really works. I'll tell you, they're out there. So they're starting to come out, and I think the best way to find out what your capital gain distribution estimates are is go to the website of the fund family that you own and check it out. I would not rely on your investment person to do that. That's something that it gets skated by a lot.
And let me take this moment to say this, and we do talk about this a lot in the classes that we teach. this is probably a great year to look at, again, and I want to emphasize, as David has, your brokerage account, not your traditional IRA, not your 401k, not your Roth, but your brokerage account. And make sure that you have tax-efficient instruments
in the right account.
In the right accounts.
Right.
Yeah, make sure you have tax-efficient instruments in those brokerage accounts so you don't get surprised. But this is a good year to reshuffle the deck, so to speak,
sure.
And to say, hey, we've got some losses on the books. Let's make the most of this.
Realize
maybe
those
losses.
Let's reinvest it in something.
Absolutely.
That can't. And I go through the details on what you can buy and what you can't buy. But it's
so tax efficiency is wildly important in the investment game. And so you just need to make sure you have the tax efficient vehicles in the right spot and the inefficient vehicles in the right spot. And it's just a good exercise to go through in a year like 2022.
We're going to take a break. Headlines from my rain-soaked Wall Street Journal over the weekend, ran over three or four times by several vehicles.
Oh, boy.
Made it to my office, dried out, and I was able to pull some headlines from my rain-soaked Wall Street Journal, which is a build on last week. Last week I talked about for some reason, they'd always throw it by my boat, and you know you walk by my house every day. But anyway, if you ever see it, Husey, just pick it up.
The Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, because I forget to go down there. On the weekends, I park up top a lot, so I don't go down below. And the Wall Street Journal sits there all weekend long, and if it rains, yeah. So when you're walking by, if you see it, feel free to nab it for me.
Yeah.
But just interesting, in 1 week, the headlines went from this to that. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Hughes, if the weather's nice, and I don't think it's going to be Saturday, I don't know for sure. Are you going to come out to the Indiana game?
You know, I hadn't thought about it, but maybe I will if the weather's
nice. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? It's been such a wonderful week. Today on this Thursday, I mean, you couldn't dial it up any better. It's like 70 degrees outside.
Maybe we
beautiful.
Should go fishing this afternoon.
Well, so those of you that follow property transfers in the paper, which, you know, I never do, but some people are obsessed with that, right?
Yes.
So when I buy real estate, and I have bought a lot over my lifetime, it's normally purchased in an LLC's name, some kind of an entity name.
Mm-hmm.
So no one knows it's me buying it, but I'm the owner of the entity behind the purchase. Well, we bought a house out on Lake Lemon, Misty and I, and our names are prominently displayed in the property transfer. So those of you that track that are like, hey, I saw you bought a house on Lake Lemon. Yes, we bought a house on Lake Lemon. So this morning, because it's new and there's paint situations and all this stuff, Misty said, can you meet me out there? Sure. I beat her by 30 minutes. I'm out there at the lake. Beautiful, beautiful morning on the lake. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bass were just blowing up the top. If I had a top order jerk bait or something,
what were
I would,
doing?
I don't know.
What were we doing?
And I'm like, I have nothing. I don't have a rod. I used to carry rod and reel with me everywhere I go. I didn't have a rod. Didn't have nothing, nothing. And I just thought, what a waste of a beautiful morning. Yeah. So anyway, I did my duty, got back to the office, and here I am now. All right, headlines. So this is all in the last week, right? Dow jumps more than 800 points, right?
Yes.
Then yesterday is something like stocks fall 2.5%, 500 points. The Dow fell 500 points. So just craziness between now and then. Credit card debt rebounds to levels we've not seen since 2019. Doug, that should tell people something.
You know, the other thing that it is an indication of, too, is people aren't paying attention. A lot of credit cards have floating rates. And so what's happened is what was a 13% rate is now an 18%. What was an 18 is now a 21. Some people now, I counseled with someone a couple weeks ago, their credit card went from a 21 to a 27.
Yeah, watch your home equity lines of credit.
Absolutely.
Watch anything that's an adjustable rate.
Anything that's adjustable.
I had a commercial line of credit that I purchased a piece of real estate with, I don't know, last year sometime, and it was just now getting ready to become permanent. When I had my, I just saw it. My line of credit used to be 4.25, and now it's 7.5.
Wow!
And I'm like, ooh, I better get not use that guy. But no, it's credit card and savings accounts are dropping. That's all in the headlines. There's wages swift rise keep the Fed on track. We've obviously realized that is the case. Jerry Lee Lewis dies at age 87. Did you know that?
I did know that. Yeah, that was
not that has any
what a
money.
Pioneer. You just think about that old piano banging kind of pioneer rock and roll or whatever music, I guess.
He was a pioneer, kind of known for his wild stage antics and had a run of smash hits. but was shadowed by some controversy, it says in this article in the Wall Street Journal. I don't know what that is.
I don't either.
Let time go by.
I'm not worried about his controversy. I remember it was the piano and the music.
Right, exactly. Just all kinds of crazy things. What comes to your mind, Doug, of what's been going on the last week? Well, we had annual contribution limits released for 2023.
Yeah,
I'm sure that came right to mind.
Social Security, you know, there's a lot of people wondering about Social Security and the increase there. There's been a lot of headlines about, and I'll throw this one to you, David, the surprising tax impact on some of this Social Security increase. What might happen to people? I know I'm getting questions about that now because there's headlines that say, hey, you might be surprised with the Social Security increase.
So almost a 9% increase coming off a 5%+ increase the previous year. So here's the thing. Once your income as a married filing joint couple, and it's a little more complicated than this, it's half of your Social Security plus all your other income, except for Roth. That doesn't count as any income. But every other income, including tax-free interest on bonds. So all that income adds up. Once it exceeds $44,000, then up to 85% of your benefits taxable. Those limits have not changed since 1983. Actually, the 85 part came in during the Clinton era, but still, since Reagan reform of Social Security, so many things in our tax code get inflated, right? Our brackets get inflated, this gets inflated, but that has not. So that what people are realizing is that more and more of my income is becoming taxable.
Yeah.
Once again, folks, you don't have to raise taxes to raise revenue. There's
a lot
of ways to do it.
That's
so that I don't think, my prediction on that will be when they finally get to Social Security reform, they're going to raise the limit that you pay Social Security on. Because right now it caps out at like 170 or something like that. That's probably going to go to 250. They will relook at how taxes on Social Security work. Either they're going to just get rid of it altogether, or they're going to add to it, or somewhere in between. But if that $44,000 would have been adjusted for all of these years, it would be something like a threshold of more like probably like $80,000+. But that's what they're talking about right there.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people been having some real questions and nervous about that, you know, because we've been talking about taxes and what does this.
The biggest issue people have, they don't withhold any tax on their Social Security, so they get surprised. And if you want to withhold taxes, it's kind of a weird deal. They have three different categories, but you can just print that off online.
Yeah.
Fill it out. It's real simple. And the crazy thing is you mail it to your local office.
Yeah.
Right. I'm helping some people retire from the federal, from FERS right now, the Federal Employee Retirement System. And I haven't actually had anyone retire for maybe a couple of years. It is a clunky system. And I started talking about it. The government's so old as far as like their systems go. You still have to fill out paperwork to do a rollover. You mail it or fax it in, and then you just hope and pray that it
got
right processed.
Person picks it up. Yeah.
And 4 to 6 weeks later, it might come through. If you're applying for retirement, the state system's this way too. If you're a teacher or a public employee, you get your retirement done, and they say, "Well, we're going to give you what we think you're going to get." About 90% of what we think. And then it's about 6 months later, finally figure it out and get it to you. Federal government's the same way. They give you about 75% of what they think you're going to get. And then about 6 months later, or somewhere between 4 and 6 months later, they'll finally shore you up and get it on track. They start your checks quick. I do know that, but it takes them forever to get it shored up. So anyway, just a lot of things like that going on. It's funny stuff. All right, let's take a quick break. Husey, come back, and we're going to wrap it up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. So I have got back on the podcast train. I took a little bit of a hiatus for a while, more because I was having a compliance issue with doing the one on 1031 tax-free exchanges, which was more of education, not recommendations. We had to get that all cleared up. That's such a fine line in our world, right, Doug?
It
recommendations
certainly
is.
Versus
certainly education. Is. This show is purely educational and sometimes entertaining, hopefully. So the podcast number 34, I recorded that this week. It will come out on Monday evening, and I'll be recording another one. I'm going to get on a series called the 5 Easy Steps series, and it's all around taxes. So again, this was inspired by a listener who emailed a question about how to determine the tax on Roth IRA distributions. So it's confusing. You know, there's a whole bunch of rules that you have to follow. Sometimes age matters, sometimes it does not matter. So I went through an entire show on, number one, I warned people again about phantom gains because we had it on episode number 32. It was realized as far as how much these capital gains were going to be. I explained that in some more detail. And then I'm like, okay, I go through how annual contributions on all of our retirement accounts, for the most part, are moving up for next year. And then finally, I got some questions again from a listener that caused me to jump in. So five easy steps on determining tax on Roth IRA distributions. I think you'll enjoy it. It'll be out Monday night. And that today I'm going to learn about how many new listeners we've had. I did see it was up 1.98% from last month. So, you know, we have over 30,000 unique downloads. I don't know at this point where we are. But just keep sharing it, you know, and tell them to start from episode one, because it's important to know why this is important to me. And then we go through the issue we have at hand, and then the solutions that we can do to make the problem at least go away or mitigate it in some fashion.
Well, if we learned anything in 2022, David, it's investing and planning sometimes hold hands, sometimes they fight. And so this is a year to take a step back and recognizing what is out of our control is what's happened in the markets. But what is in control is you have a plan.
Right.
And I think that's part of what the podcast is really about, is having a plan for things that are on the horizon.
And it's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, have you been on yet with me?
No.
Okay. Rod's been on once. Mm-hmm. I've had Marty James, CPA, on for a three-part episode. That was really good. So, I'll get you on here pretty soon because I need, I'll run out of material eventually, I think, I don't hear on the show, but the show's different, right? Because it's a little more topical. It's got, you know, it's always kind of moving around. I mean, we recirculate topics that we've talked about over and over and over, but, you know, I was telling someone the other day that all of a sudden someone will tell me, oh, I just heard you talk about this, and I may have talked about it a bunch, but until it applies to you, do you actually listen?
Exactly.
Otherwise, it goes through one ear and out the other. So, forgive me if I repeat myself, but I'm telling you that people don't always listen, believe it or not. We're all basically like teenagers when it comes to things. We only listen to the things we really want to hear or need to hear or apply to us, and that's just the way we're wired. So, Doug, thanks for being part of the program today.
Yeah.
Thanks to Rod for being part of the program as well. Listen for Rod on Last in the Afternoon on Big Show Friday, and we'll be back here in the hot seat next week again. This has been Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, let's have I don't care if we win, yes I do, or if we lose on Saturday. I just want to play good, okay? Don't turn the ball over. Go out and have some fun and see if we can, you know, get that tip over the goal line again and take a victory home over the Nittany Lions. So have a good one, everyone. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.